So AJ, thank you for taking part in the Living Legacy Project.
It's here my pleasure.
At the Birchfield Penny Arts Center.
So we wanted to ask you, what inspired you to be an artist?
I guess what inspired me to be an artist was, thinking back to, I think I was like 6 or 7 years old, and my sister was in high school, and she was taking an art history class, and she brought back a big survey art book, and I spent a lot of time paging through it, and then one day, and for some reason in the survey art book, they had a picture of Ed Kienholz's state hospital, and it scared the shit out of me. It's an installation, and basically it's, if you were to see it in a gallery, it would just look like a giant block, because he built a room, and it's supposed to be a cell in like a mental institution, and the only way that you view it is through the barred window that's only, 6 by 10 or something like that. And inside is an old, enamel bunk bed with soiled mattresses, and it's a single light bulb hanging down, I think. And there's a figure on the lower bunk made out of this resin, crappy looking stuff, and it's all drippy. And then its head is a fishbowl. That's the one. And the figure above it is in a neon thought bubble. And the meaning essentially being that the person's, and he's shackled to the bed. I didn't know this when I was like 7. I was just like, I'm afraid of it, but it can't get out of my head. The thought being that the person on the lower bunk is in such agony, its only thought is its own hellish existence. So, and its heads are fishbowls with little black fish in them. So, I don't know what that means exactly. But it's something that stuck in my head. And then from then on, I kept looking at going to the library and taking out all as many art books as I could, bringing home a stack that was taller than I was, and just I remember laying on top of them and just paging through them for hours. So that's pretty much it. From then on, it sort of stuck that I liked it, and then I really didn't start drawing really until 5th, 6th, 7th grade, and then I noticed that if I was drawing, I always had like 3 or 4 girls around my desk, and that's just kind of neat. And I don't even think I was really that good. I was just better than everybody else, and it was a tiny little Catholic school, so that was a low bar. But then from there, it just kind of snowballed. I mean, people always ask me, it's like, oh, when did you decide to do this? And I give them a more brief story, but it's because, I made my most important life decision when I was 7. And people's like, oh, it's so great that you knew exactly what you wanted to do. But I'm like, I could have been wrong. I was 7. But, it served me okay so far.
Now, where did you go to school?
Okay, I went to school. I went to high school. Oh, do you want all the way back? St. John the Baptist, that was K-8. St. Joe's that was high school. And then Buff State, 5 years to get an art degree. Woo! Record time.
Why did you choose to go to Buffalo State?
To be honest, it was money. Applying for college, I can't even remember the places that I applied. It's going back to the 80s. It was basically money. Mm-hmm. And still, it's what I wanted to do, but I was very, I don't want to say sheltered, but I didn't know the machinations of, you have to go to an art school and then go to another art school to meet people and then you're whatever. It was just, I want to paint more and learn how to paint better. So I went here. So.
And you got your BA here?
I got my BFA here.
BFA here.
Bachelor of Fine Arts, which is, that's a spicy meatball.
Who are some of your most important influences, both as maybe teachers or also other artists that inspired you?
As far as like an inspirational teacher would be Jim Phelan, who was only here for a semester because they were looking for a tenure person, but we just got a different painting teacher every year, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. No consistency whatsoever, but a lot of different views. I had him for drawing and painting. In the drawing class, we'd been drawing from the figure for the longest time, and nobody really gave us much structure with it. So we had been drawing from the figure for a while, and he came in, and he looked at what we were doing, and was like, you people do not deserve to be in front of have a figure in front of you. And a lot of the students were just like, who the hell is this guy? And he was right. He just took us right back. This was our junior, senior year. He took us right back to cube, sphere, cone, start us right from the beginning and learning how to shade again. And it was me, my friend Nathan, and maybe another guy were just like, oh, this guy's awesome. So he broke us down and just everything you know, toss it. This is how you do it. And you're right. And he was a great painter in his own right, and we would be in the studio late at night, my friend Joe and I, and we were wandering the hall, and we saw him once working in his office. It's like, that's all right, it's like 2 a.m. You're okay with us. So he was really good. He ripped me a new ass as an advisor too, which was great. Hated him at the time because, oh, how dare you? And, you know, 3 weeks later, it's like, that guy's brilliant. Gubernick was my advisor through school, and he taught me one of the greatest life lessons ever when I was having an argument with... I was looking to get an independent study because the adjunct teacher, she and I just butted heads again. She took it way too seriously for some reason. I don't know. Who knows? But anyways, I asked him for an independent study, and his advice was, listen, this is your last semester. If you have to suck shit for 6 months, just suck shit for 6 months. I was like, you asshole! Was brilliant, and it's true. And it's like, if you have only 6 months to get through, just deal with it.
And what was Gubernick's first name?
Richard Gubernick. Now, as far as other artists, that's changed all through time. Like the first one, I was got into pop art when I was really, really young, because I was all just self-involved 7-year-old, and Andy Warhol has the same name as me. So when I saw him on Love Boat, and that's great. Look at that, he's on Love Boat. So yeah, I got really into pop art. Then through him, I was really into precisionism as a kid too. Who did the, was it DeMuth? I saw the figure 5 in gold. I think that was him. And Charles Sheeler. And then back to Rosenquist, he had a retrospective at the Albert Knox in like 86 or 87. I went to that thing like 30 times, just running through it like it was, because that's when it was free and you could just, and all the guards knew me because I was in there so often. It was just amazing.
How old were you?
So 86, 87. Doing math, 14, 15.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, such a dork. It's great. And then slowly got into like abstract expressionism a little bit. Liked Rothko. I liked Clifford Still just because no one went into that Clifford Still room. And so I spent a lot of time in there because I hated people. So you go in and you could just sit with the things and not be bothered. Or people would come in and say something stupid and I'd throw a pencil at them and then they'd leave. And then Rothko, even though I can't see much of the colors that are in his stuff, just the way... Two completely different ways of painting abstract. Then getting older, Gerhard Richter, the Asselmans, they're big for me. Eric Richter's big for everybody. That's like such a cop-out. It's like saying, I love breathing oxygen.
You mentioned that you couldn't see some of the colors in the Rothko piece.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that for a minute?
Oh, being colorblind.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things that... everybody taking their health class in school, they notice, they have those little I forget what they're called, but the little eye test made up of a bunch of little dots. Mm-hmm. Everybody saw the number. I'm thinking it was a joke being played on me. I was like, I'm not seeing a goddamn number. I almost got in trouble because people thought, well, but it turns out I can't. I'm red-green colorblind. So certain things, I mean, now I almost see them because it's been, I don't know if it's because I paint that colors, or, you know, I come from a, you know, an artist or design background, that color only makes sense in certain places. And certain things in, you know, the natural world, certain things are obviously certain colors. Certain things, like, I mean, you put me into, like, an interior with low lighting, everything sort of just becomes the same mushy brown-red color. I can't tell. Yellows and blues I can see, but greens, purples, I have a hard time distinguishing those things. So, do I have anything else about that?
Well, that kind of leads us into what we wanted to talk to you about next, which was about your art.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we'll come back to your colorblindness.
Anyway. Sure.
But would you like to talk about your art a little bit?
Sure. What would you like to know?
Talk about some of your early works.
Oh, God, it was terrible.
The trajectory from there to here.
Okay. I did a lot of copying in high school. I copied Da Vinci drawings and paintings poorly. A couple figures from the Sistine Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
Just busted those things just terribly. And then in high school, yeah, I really got into abstract painting because everybody does and nobody knows what the hell they're doing their first year. So I'm going to paint abstract, even though I can't even draw a straight line. I can paint abstract, but you can't. The hardest thing in the world is to paint a good abstract painting. Photorealism is easy compared to a good, I'm talking about anybody can paint abstract, but a good one, that's damn near impossible. So I painted a lot of shitty abstract paintings, then a lot of, like, really mopey, morose, like, troubled surrealistic things with elongated figures, and, just horrible, horrible stuff. Then I was trying to think, because by that time I started, I got my own studio at Buffalo Art Studio. Mm-hmm. So I was still in college when I got that. Yeah, I was painting shitty paintings there too. Bad surrealist things. And then kind of morphing into pop and surrealism at the same time. Then, got back into more popish stuff and saw the work of Wayne Thiebaud. Or I saw it, I didn't just say saw it. I just investigated it more and more thoroughly. And, kind of ran with the whole cake pie thing, and that kind of just took me in a whole other direction by isolating one little object. And then I did that with, you know, the Pillsbury Doughboy, mm-hmm. did a Mr. Peanut painting, the Kool-Aid pitcher thing. And through that, I was just investigating how to make things look a certain way, or how to paint. Because then that's when I was doing my first, did the first Twinkie painting that the Birchfield has. I wanted to do a series of them, basically the one that is here is called Crush, because mm-hmm. it was supposed to be the first painting of the series was supposed to be based on the course of a relationship, but based on hostess cakes. So I ended up painting a ho-ho, which was called First Time, because it was this really drab painting of a ho-ho kind of coming in and half in and half out of the individual wrapper. Really subtle, really subtle. I ended up destroying that one because it was just stupid. And then when I was working on that, I was somebody introduced me as to somebody, and I was like, "Oh, you're the pie guy." And this was like 2000 or something, like the end of 2000, and I'm like, "I'm not anything yet. You know, I'm still figuring shit out. I'm not the whatever guy. I'm just, I'm the painter. I'm just..." So, luckily, at the time, I got a residency in New York in 2001, late 2001. So I decided to stop doing the cakes and pies stuff, and I moved to sex toys, which is strangely very similar. When I was there, I did a series of fragments of childhood toys and paired them up with sex toys. The idea being that the desire of the child is the same as the desires of the adult. It's just how they manifest one another and how they're satisfied. Mm-hmm. That's the only way, that they're different, and sometimes they're horribly similar. And then from there, I came back and did large paintings of images from coloring books. And then I glazed over them dozens and dozens of times with all this poisonous, great lacquers and varnishes. And then on top of that, I painted a giant sex toy. So that was fun. Then that's another one, just dealing with colors that I couldn't even see. The subtle balances of, like the one painting that I only sold one from that series. And it's Wilma and Betty in a strap-on. And I remember exactly, I started the painting with this bright yellow. When I started the paintings, I would actually just layer them with all these translucent colors that, you know, and then see how they kind of worked out. I'm not even sure how it happened. Because it started as like a day glow yellow to a pale blue, and then slowly worked its way to an almost Pepto-Bismol pink. And then put Wilma and Betty on, and in like an orangey, trippy color. When I painted Wilma and Betty, I remember I was drunk off my ass at the studio, like 3:30 in the morning, and I listened to Beastie Boys Looking Down the Barrel of a Gun like 33 times in a row. That was just painting Wilma and Betty. There's a weird gap between the sex toy paintings and where I am now. I'm not exactly sure, because that was like 2001. Then the black and white stuff started. Oh, then I did a bunch of things with, I did diptychs. Did like stuffed animals and shoes, or I did breast pumps and crazy straws. Did some large paintings of babies, things like that. And then, I forget exactly what it was. Oh, I did a friend commissioned me. He was a good friend, so I charged him so little money for this thing. It was disgusting. He got images of Niagara Falls when the water was turned off. And I somehow was able to combine the two views into one painting, and I did it all in black and white. And that's when I started to shift from color to the stuff that I'm doing now, which is predominantly just in black and white. That, and a combination of being colorblind and didn't want to deal with color anymore, and even more importantly, so many times I heard people saying how much they liked the painting, but oh, why didn't you make the background red instead of that color? And or just, you know, fuck off. How about you stop looking at the painting? How about that? Or why don't you do a painting? And you know, people have their own likes and dislikes, their prejudices for and against colors, and I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. When I look at a work, I like there to be as few roadblocks between me and a conversation with the work. And for some, if color is going to be that big of a deal for people, just take it right out. And all you're dealing with is the image or light and shadow, that kind of thing. That's pretty much the main reason why I took color out of the work. So that's where I am now.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Sure.
For answering that. I did want to ask you, let's see, my next question you've kind of already answered, which was... talking about your body of work as a whole and what are some of the different themes in it?
Let's see. Well, yeah, to even carry on with what I was saying before, I think the entire course is me slowly simplifying, taking as much out of it while still having a successful painting. I mean, I'm even actually going back to experimenting with abstract paintings now. Because now I think I'm almost at a point where I can make a successful one. I hate it when kids start painting abstractly first, because they can't paint something else. No, you have to... Every abstract expressionist was an amazing draftsman. They knew what the hell they were doing, so they learned the rules. Then you can fuck the rules. So yeah, I think the whole course was me slowly simplifying. It's like when I was doing these really mashed up, really morose, oh, I'm so lonely, surrealist paintings. There was just all this stuff going on, and then just a single object and ground, mm-hmm. And now I'm taking color out of that. Mm-hmm. So I mean, if there's any like overall like theme in, I mean, desire always happens to be in like the food and the toys and all that stuff. They're like the big things that I'm working on now are like the larger paintings, even some of the smaller ones. They're all about just they're not about anything except the moment that the source photo was taken. Mm-hmm. That's it. In that single moment can have a thousand different things for anybody. But it's all about concentrating on just a single peripheral view moment and the infinite things that that moment can contain. I'm of the belief that, you know, that when you have rules and you have boundaries, that's where infinity can happen. There's an infinity between your fingertips. And I like simplifying things as much as I possibly can and still having an infinite amount of possibilities within them. Yeah, like just simple moments that, you know, I hate it when I see artists when their stuff has to say something, has to have a meaning, and has to have this, and you viewer must know their anguish or the anguish of somebody else or the injustice of something. Mine's none of that. Mine is you sitting in a chair looking at dust on your wall. The awesomeness that that is. Because mine's very, instead of macro, mine is very micro. And I think that's how it's really always going to be. I'm not a political person. It bores me. I'm not really interested in people. I'm interested in people liking my stuff. And God knows they need to buy it. It's, you know, you just change one person's perspective about one stupid thing, and that just sort of, you know, you don't have to end a war with painting. No one's painting Guernica anymore. Mm-hmm. I hope not, you know.
It's been done.
I know. And, you know, Leon Golub did all the horrible paintings of people being strung up by mercenaries and things like that. And yes, that's still going on, but me as a painter, it's... I have a hard time painting something that I don't personally experience. And I think any good painting should be able to speak to anybody. And that's what I'm trying, having my stuff try to do. Everybody's seen a brick wall. Nobody pays attention to it necessarily, but everyone's seen it. Everybody's driven in a car. Most people have driven in a car in the rain. Most people have seen snow, even in picture or whatever. But your stuff's not speaking to people in sub-Saharan Africa. Well, I don't give a shit about people in sub-Saharan Africa. I'm sorry, I really don't. Mm-hmm. It's not part of my sphere of existence. Mm-hmm. And people will be pissed off by me saying that, but no one walking up the street is thinking about that. So when I'm in my studio making work about, you know, what that I want to make, it's not going to be about that. And it's not going to be, you know, targeted towards them or, you know, people suffering in India. And that's just not what my work is about and never will be. Somebody else wants to make stuff work about that. That's great, but boring.
So my next question is, not only do you make these paintings, but in some ways, for example, right now you're wearing a t-shirt
yes.
with a picture of you on it from a painting that you
did. I didn't do laundry. This wasn't... And I needed to put on a clean shirt, so I took my own shirt. I lost money by taking this shirt. Now I'm wearing a stupid shirt with my stupid face on it.
Well, what led you to go that direction? You've also made beer cozies,
yeah.
and shot glasses.
I've never been comfortable with the whole self-promotion mm-hmm. aspect of being an artist, which you really have to be until you get, you know, 3,000 galleries and stuff selling for $500,000 because mm-hmm. you know, sneezed on something. This was sort of like my first real effort into that. I did the self-portrait with the Guinness and the red wine on the napkins thing, and I won a publishing promotions grant for that show, the Beyond In show, and I got that would allow me to make a catalog for the show and have all my pieces in it, and the promotions thing. So I think it's just a goofy thing to put my face on stuff, because I'm a goofy looking person. Yeah, I see t-shirts with my face on them. Why not?
I did also want to ask you mentioned you use a camera.
Mm-hmm.
What role does that play in your process?
Huge. Actually, getting a digital camera, I think I have a really shitty artist statement. And but the one thing I do mention is that getting a digital camera completely changed my work. Because up until then, all the imagery that I'd use would be from stuff that I found. Mm-hmm. Literally had to search out an image of... A lot of them were like things that I find on the internet or magazines or mm-hmm. something like that, and I just mush them together. But that tended to be very limiting because I was relying on somebody else for my imagery, which I'm a control freak, and that kind of got boring. It's like I don't know how certain like sculptors do it when you know like their work they make their sculptures out of found objects. What if you don't find objects? Or what if the objects you find don't do anything for you? And you have to keep finding more objects, and then it just becomes a whole other pit of hell. So I carry the camera with me most times. So no matter where I am, if I just see just something, I'm just like, I just shoot. Just not even looking at the camera. I'll just press button. Thank you, digital photography, that you can do that. And just waste 1,000 frames or whatever. It doesn't matter. So then I take them, put them into my computer, and forget about them. So then 2-3 months later, every 6 months, I go into the photos that I have. And if one strikes me again, mm-hmm. I'll create its own folder for it, or for images that I like. Then I'll forget that folder again. Then I'll go back a third and second, third, fourth time, and then I will slowly pare them down to the ones that I think really capture what was going on, or capture the moment that I was having when I first photographed, or not even capture the moment, but just work. You know, there's certain things that work and certain things that don't. Mm-hmm. Then I take that image and then I crop it a little bit. Mm-hmm. I never really add anything to the photographs as far as the paintings go. There's something that just, because part of them are sort of half memory kind of things. Mm-hmm. I'm not obviously going from memory, I'm working from photo. But the idea, like when you remember something, it's never 100% there. Mm-hmm. There's always things missing, but rarely is there really anything accurately added. So I try not to really add anything, unless sometimes the photograph does not translate perfectly to a painting. It's all about making a good painting. Because mm-hmm. half the time, or more than half the time, in the process of doing a painting, I'll not even look at the photograph anymore, because it's not my stuff. It's not about reproducing a photograph. Mm-hmm. That's why people, oh, it's so photorealistic, and it's not. I show people, this is what photorealism looks like. That's photorealism. My stuff is not in any shape or form photorealistic. It's like within 2 feet, it just turns to a mush of grays and blacks and whites. So yes, that's the photo plays a huge role. Photo, like the camera plays a huge role in the process, because without the images, I mean, that's why I got carbonite, because if I lose my store of images, I have nothing to do. Mm-hmm. I'll have to start all over again after the weeks of crying.
Let's see. So now I want to talk to you a little bit about your personal and professional development as an artist.
Sure.
That's kind of the last sort of theme we have.
No problem.
What do you hope to achieve with your art?
Oh, man. That's... I mean, selfishly, my thing is I just want to make enough... You know, I just want to keep making work. Mm-hmm. That's it. Sure, I'd like it to be seen by more people. Every artist wants that. I mean, I can't say that... I mean, I'll probably give the answer that 90% of other artists, 99 or 100% of other artists, I want it to be seen by more people. I want it to be in other cities and other countries. Is that necessary? When I think about it deeply, no. It's just about me making more stuff. And then, of course, making enough money to continue making more stuff. So my major goal is to never... I want every new painting... And because I do like side projects that of things that I've done before. Like right now I'm doing these tiny paintings of tater tots and light bright pegs and candy, and it's like shit that I've done before. It's I can't say it's mindless, but I mean it's you know, almost rote, mm-hmm. kind of thing. But when I'm working on new pieces, I want every new painting to scare the shit out of me. I never want to paint my best painting. That's pretty much my only goal right there, is I never want to plateau, because when you've seen artists and musicians, they're like, oh, you should have stopped. Your last one was so good, and then you put out this crap, and you either got lazy or complacent or something, or you're just churning out the same thing. That's not what this job is about. This job is to scare yourself constantly, to always, I mean, I know I'm never going to be totally happy because I'm never happy with my stuff. Once I'm happy with my stuff, there's no point in doing it anymore. Because there's a whole point is just to keep getting better or trying things that fail. Mm-hmm. The constant failure. I was chastised by somebody for using the word failure, but it's like, why didn't you just say they're unsuccessful? No, because when the failure is what you learn from, mm-hmm. unsuccessful is, you know, well, it's such a pussy word. Mm-hmm. It's a fucking failure. How do I resurrect this thing from ashes of this bullshit that I just made? So that, I mean, it's basic, but that's my only real goal, is to just every new body of work or work, just at one point, just sheer, unadulterated terror. I have no idea what I'm doing. And then somehow make it work. Mm-hmm. Or fail. Mm-hmm. And then turn that upside down and somehow make it work. And then set it on fire or whatever. So.
Let's see. What have you done personally to advance your career in the arts? looking at the whole trajectory of your career, you're a very well-established artist in the region.
Not be an asshole. That's the only thing I can think of. I mean, yes, I'm an asshole, but you don't... When somebody comes up to you, if you know, and they say nice things or they have a question, be polite. Mm-hmm. You don't approach this as an attitude. With an attitude, I still have, and I will always have, I have the greatest job and the dumbest job in the world. I smear colored goo on fabric, and people think it's valuable. That's fucking ridiculous. And that's great, but I mean, that's what painters do. Mm-hmm. Smear pigmented goo on a surface. And when you explain it and when you say it that way, how can you take it so seriously where you're going to have an attitude about it? It's great. Yeah. It's horrible, but it's great. I think that's basically it. If someone is like when I was starting out, and I think of like starting out like when I started at Buffalo Art Studio, if somebody asked me to donate something, I was there. Somebody asked me to show up something, I was there. Somebody asked me my opinion, I graciously gave it to them in a polite way. Or if somebody did the same for me, I was gracious back. I mean, I'm a sarcastic prick, but you know when to rein that in, or you know who your audience is. If that's what they want to hear, then you give them that. But other than that, don't be an asshole. It's really simple. I mean, I think that's a great, not just being an artist, but anything in life. Don't be a dick, and you'll be amazed at what happens. It's not going to happen right away. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, assholes do get shit done very quickly, but. An asshole as an artist, I don't think that necessarily can... I mean, you have to be really fucking good to be really big. I don't think I'm that good. To be and no one in this town is that good. No, and there's very few people that are that fucking good to be an asshole to everybody. It's just counterproductive. Not just for their career, but just people in general. I can't stand people with attitudes about being an artist. We make neat stuff. We get to play. You get to play. It's hard work, but the worst day in the studio, I've thought of giving it up, are better than any day in any office or anything I could ever imagine. Even when you get a raise or worst day in the studio is better than that.
Let's see. Well, what would you say some of your needs are as an artist? What do you need from the larger community as an artist?
From the larger community?
Meaning people, institutions, organizations?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just... when you first said that, I just thought general public. The general public, I think, has just such a wrong idea of what an artist is and what we do and the type of people we are. My girlfriend, Karen, now, she still thinks it's amazing that I like hockey and football. I completely, and my friends in the arts that she's met, completely, you know, and she's an open-minded person, but completely blew her mind as to what, you know, artists and art, you know, art people did. So, I mean, and if she's an open-minded person, just hasn't been that exposed to it, just imagine what even the greater public thinks. We're just scumbags. We're communists. We rape babies, mm-hmm. and we set churches on fire. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that's apparently what we do. So, I mean, that's why I tailgated at the Albright. Mm-hmm. Just to, like, if I got one person that was driving by the Albright, just be like, those crazy assholes are tailgating on the day of a Bills game at the Albright. I might want to check that place out. Mm-hmm. If I did that to one person, then that whole thing was a success.
Mm-hmm. So more public support, more public awareness?
Support, you know, always is like, there always seems to have a negative and financial. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, everybody needs money. There's surprise. I'm a capitalist. Like I've said this before, I'm not in this for the money, but I'm sure as fuck not doing this for free. Mm-hmm. Although I have donated a lot of the stuff, but that's not the point. Support as in, you know, when a museum or a gallery or an art thing does it, it's usually the loudest people that have no clue, it's the people with no clue that are the loudest voices mm-hmm. about stuff, or when, you know, it's mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. I've tried to write things on comment sections and the newspaper and stuff like that. It's just the loudest people that have no clue, not the first clue, mm-hmm. about what they're talking about. And yes, art is for everybody, and everybody's, you know, mm-hmm. can have their opinion about artwork, but not when people are, you know, their jobs are doing stuff like that. It's like, educate yourself, and then, you know, everybody can have an opinion, but having an informed opinion is so much more valuable.
Let's see. As an artist in Western New York, what would help you advance your career and beyond Western New York?
It's sad to say, but getting my work out of Western New York. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the goal. I'll stay here. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I like it here. It's home. And, I mean, I can work anywhere. It doesn't really matter. Put me in Alaska. I'll still paint the same shit. It's like when I was in Vermont in the studio residency. Mountains of grandeur and snow-capped awesomeness and valleys, little village that we were in. It was like a storybook and everything. And what did I paint? I painted the residue and the snowflakes on my skylight. So, I mean, no matter where I am, that's what I paint. So, what would advance me? That's tough to say. I mean, I'll just sound really needy. It's like, what all artists need is I need the people that I know that know shit to, like, hook me up with one person. Mm-hmm. Give me one person that's in the know in Manhattan or Los Angeles mm-hmm. that actually likes me, likes my work. I'll get to know them, and then I'll take it from there. Because that's kind of what I did here. Mm-hmm. You know, I met one person that introduced me to another person that introduced me to these people and whatever. So if I'm any success, it's just because of that. And that's essentially what any gallery person says. It's, you know, unsolicited submissions are just a waste of time. Mm-hmm. Even I was in that MARC program through NYFA, and the gallery directors and curators and owners basically said, the artists that we actually look at are introduced to us through artists that we're already working with mm-hmm. or gallery people that we know and trust. None of this, you know, blind submission is just a waste of time. And I've heard that so many times, so I don't even do it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's you'll look like a douche. So that and a dump truck full of cash would not hurt. So it's basically, I mean, it's so rudimentary. Rudimentary. what I need is more people to see my stuff. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And the right people. It sounds very elitist, but there are the right people, and then there's the wrong people. The right people can actually advance it. Mm-hmm. The wrong people, not that there's such a thing. And there's like, oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And it's, you know, the artist in me versus the business person, which I'm a shitty business person, but the business person in me is, thanks for liking it. Are you buying it? No? Great. Go away. Mm-hmm. Can you advance you help me get my work into another place? No? Nice talking to you. Got to go over here now. Mm-hmm. And it's a horrible thing, but it's just a fucking reality. Mm-hmm. And you feel like an asshole for saying it, but it's fucking true. It's, who are these people that can help me make my work? Because I can only do so much. Mm-hmm. And you can only self-promote so much until you look like just a douchey hack. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to do that. I'm wearing a t-shirt with a face on it. That's pretty much enough. That's putting me well into the vinegar and water category.
Good, I'm glad you said it.
Yeah. So, that's pretty simple.
Good.
More people to more faces that can actually do stuff.
More networking opportunities with people in positions of influence.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. And it's like networking opportunities where these people are actually interested in it. Because mm-hmm. you've been to things where like, oh, there's going to be this person and this person and this person there. They don't want to be there sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what you do, it's not gonna work out well.
AJ, what advice do you have for emerging artists?
Work more. I mean, there's a lot of advice I have to give, and I wish more people would ask me, because you can't go up to people that you see working, and like you can see a kernel of like good stuff, but you see them just doing making the worst decisions, and you come off as just a pompous prick, because it's not like I'm a paragon of success or anything like that. I'm barely scraping by. But work. That's, you know, like I said, don't be an asshole, and work. Make more work. Make more work. Sacrifice for it. You know, do it when you don't want to do it. Forgo other things in order to make more work. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that'll. I see people showing way too early. And it's like, oh, I made this stuff, so now I have to show it. No, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. I made a lot of stuff before I ever showed anything. And I show too early. There's something to be said for the experience of getting ready for a show and having your, you know, presented well, but it doesn't matter what the presentation is if the work itself just doesn't warrant being shown, which, again, sounds like a horrible, pompous thing to say, but it's fucking true, you know? You gotta learn what the hell you're doing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's my biggest advice, is to work more and get inspiration from everywhere. Don't be afraid of failure. Fail constantly. It's one of the greatest joys that this job affords you, is there's no consequences to your failure other than you wasted a bunch of time. You know, you're not a doctor, you're not a lawyer, no one's going to jail or dying, no one's losing money, no one's doing it, it's only you. So fail constantly and just roll around it like a pig in shit. Failure, 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 because that's where all your good stuff comes from. And don't be an asshole. It's so much easier by not being an asshole. I'm trying to think, other advice.
About when to get your work out there.
When? Well,
or
it's
how?
That's a tough one. When you're starting out, if you have an opportunity to hang your work anywhere, do it. You know, restaurants, bars, whatever. The hair salons, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, the idea when you're just starting out is you want more people to even know that you exist. It never stops. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, when you get to a certain point, you really can't do that anymore. So now's the time to do it. Mm-hmm. It's a double... I hate the phrase double-edged sword. That's a double-edged sword. Donating your stuff to fundraisers, things like that. Because then it's like, if you've ever donated blood to the Red Cross, they are on your ass like Dracula every friggin' month. But once you start donating artwork, people are going to be on your ass like fucking leeches. Every stupid board in this of every... non-for-profit wants to have an art auction, which is bullshit. It's like, yeah, let's get the poorest among us to give up their stuff so we can have a board. But yeah, but when you're first starting out, do that. I mean, you never know. I mean, people go to these things. A lot of, when people say, like, how do you start collecting? First thing people say is, if you don't have a lot of money when you start collecting, go to art auctions, because you'll pick up some cool stuff for very little money. And if you're donating, you don't care what it goes for. And seasoned collectors do that. So you never know who's going to be your first buyer. You never know who's going to be your next client. That goes back to not being an asshole. So, yeah, and then on top of that, stay in the fucking studio. That's you can't do that enough.
Or find inspiration in the bar.
You stay in the studio first. Took me, you know, it took me a while to find inspiration in a bar. Even though it's everywhere. I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be a bar. It could be this room, the carpet, the fingerprints on that glass, the reflection of the window in there. Mm-hmm. But there's too much shit with files. This place would not be a painting. Other than maybe just like the how the lights start kind of be a foot below the ceiling.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. And don't get my fucking way. No. kidding. I crush you.